Welcome to Journey of the Monkey King, a chapter-by-chapter discussion of Journey to the West, and the Journey to the West has finally started. I'm Kriva, and I'm joined by my friend MJ.
Hello!
As you can expect from basically every chapter, this chapter is going to feature death, but also cannibalism and animal death.
Oh no! Those are two of my not favorite things.
So
really freaked out. No. Okay.
So
no disemboweling this time.
A bit of disemboweling.
Okay, cool.
An animal.
Oh no.
Sorry.
It's okay. I'm here for this.
So last chapter,
my friend's getting a puppy today, and I'm just gonna have to make him send like all the photos after.
That's puppies are important.
They're so important. They're the most important. Really.
So last chapter, Tripitaka headed out from Chang'an with only two disciples and a horse, and also a written decree from the emperor and a solid gold arms ball, and a magic robe and a magic staff. But you know, not a huge amount in terms of travel supplies or manpower.
He seems well staffed with all of that, to be honest.
Yeah.
You gotta worry about him not having as much provisions, but it kind of seems like the solid gold ball might help out with that.
Yeah, he can always pawn it, I guess, but yeah, it's...
Yep.
So after a few days, they arrive at the Temple of the Law Gate, and they spend the night there. They're greeted by 1,000 monks and treated to a vegetarian meal.
Sweet.
The monks at the temple warn Tripitaka about all the dangers on the road to India. Wide rivers, tall mountains, tigers, leopards, and even monsters. But Tripitaka has made a vow, and he's determined to go forward with it no matter the danger.
Your typical hero protagonist.
That night, he also makes a vow to stop at every temple he passes and to burn incense, to worship Buddha whenever he finds Buddha, and to sweep a pagoda whenever he reaches a pagoda.
Nice. Okay. Cool. He's a considerate fellow, as Tripitaka.
Yeah. So, after that, the next day, the party continues on their journey, and after a few days, they pass through Guangzhou to the Henzhou district at the edge of the Tang Empire. The guards at the border are happy to receive someone on a quest from the emperor, and he absolutely does not have to sneak over the border illegally or anything like that.
Oh, because he's legit in this telling.
He's legit. So the night before heading out across the border, they spend the night at the Fu Yuan Temple and then head off before dawn. He's really impatient to get going.
That's fair. I mean, it has taken us 13 chapters to get this far.
True. But 20 or 30 miles beyond the border, they come up to a difficult to navigate mountain range. And it still being like twilight, the sun hasn't come up. They end up losing the road and start searching through the grass again to try and find a path. And they're starting to worry that they've already gone the wrong way when suddenly the ground goes from under them and all four of them, including the horse, fall into a deep pit. So they hear voices calling out, seize them, and suddenly 50 or 60 ogres appear from a sudden gust of wind.
From a sudden gust of wind?
There's a sudden gust of wind and then suddenly there's just like 50 ogres.
Shit.
So they're understandably pretty terrified, and the book throughout has some great descriptions and euphemisms for this sort of thing. So Tripitaka's spirit leaves him while his two disciples have their bones grow weak and their tendons turn numb with fear.
That is genuinely very descriptive on the tendons thing. I haven't thought of that before, but yes, that has happened to me.
So they look up from the pit and they see a huge tiger monster king looking down on them. His name is General Yin, and he orders the three of them to be tied up while they prepare to cook them.
Oof.
So,
This is where the horse goes, isn't it?
as the ogres are setting up to cook them, two other monster kings arrive, the Bear Mountain Lord and the Bullock Hermit. The translation actually says the steer hermit, but steer is just what they call bullocks in the States, so I decided to just say bullock.
Bollocks Hermit, got it.
So the Bear Mountain Lord greets Yin as an old friend, and he says, "You're on top form, General Yin. Congratulations, congratulations." And the Bullock Hermit adds, "General Yin looks better than ever. It's marvelous, it's marvelous. And you two gentlemen, how have you been these days?" "Oh, just maintaining my idleness, just keeping up with the times." "Oh, how did those three get there?" "Oh, they practically presented themselves at the door." "Can they be used for the guest dinner?" "By all means. Let's not finish them all up. We'll dine on two of them and leave one over." And I quoted all of that basically verbatim. I'm not exaggerating how polite they are to each other. I kind of love it.
I like a polite cannibal.
Yeah.
They're my favorite kind of cannibal.
Yeah.
Impeccable manners.
Have you heard of this obscure show called Hannibal?
That's I did picture Mads Mikkelsen saying all of that.
I haven't actually watched it.
It's pretty good. It's incredibly homoerotic.
That's what you
And
want.
I enjoy it. Although, yeah, cannibalism is just a specific kind of yick, the thing for me. I'm not sure why, but it's specifically I just hate it.
So anyway, they eat Tripitaka's two disciples.
Oh no. They got like one scene. How many disciples are these? Are his disciples just like the book's red shirts? Like, how many more of them are gonna die?
I cannot comment on future events.
Cool. All right. Just he's a dangerous guy to know, is Tripitaka.
But yeah, they never even got names, and loads of random, like, completely inconsequential characters get names. But anyway, the horse is fine, though. They don't eat the horse.
Okay, good. As long as the horse is okay.
Yeah, so the two visiting monster kings stay until dawn, before leaving and promising to repay General Yin's hospitality. So, Tripitaka at this point has gone semi-catatonic from stress.
Fair.
And after the sun is fully risen, an old man approaches holding a staff. He waves his hand, and Tripitaka's ropes suddenly snap. And he blows on Tripitaka, and Tripitaka starts to feel a bit better. Tripitaka falls to the ground and thanks the old man for saving him. The old man asks if he lost anything, and Tripitaka says his followers were eaten, and he's no idea where his horse or luggage is now either. And the old man just points off with his staff and says, "Isn't that your horse over there with two bundles?" And yeah, the horse and the luggage are there. They're completely fine, completely untouched. And so the old man says they're in a dangerous place called the Double Fork Ridge, and it's ruled basically by the spirits of a bear, a tiger, and a bull that have become monsters.
What
And
happened?
they just became monsters.
Oh, they were like normal bear tiger?
Yeah, they were a normal tiger and bear and bull, but they became monsters. It happens.
Oh, I guess it does.
And all the ogres are just like spirits of like local wolves and stuff as well, that became monsters because that happens.
Because cruelty to animals, this is my headcanon. They're gonna come back and haunt you, bitches.
But he also says because of Tripitaka's purity, they cannot eat him. And the old man leads Tripitaka to safety before suddenly rising into the air and flying off on the back of a white crane with a crimson head. Because
Whoosh! Do we ever see or hear for the from this old man again?
We've heard from him before, because a piece of paper wafts down from the breeze, from where he rises into the air with a short poem on it. And for once, I will actually read the poem.
Yay!
I am the planet Venus from the west, who came to save you by special request. Some pupils divine will come to your aid. Blame not the scriptures for hardships ahead. Ahead, I'm not sure if Anthony, you intended for that second couplet to be a rhyme or not. It's a little bit of a stretch.
He's a Scottish Venus from the West. West of Scotland.
So, after reading this, Tripitaka bows to the sky and thanks the gold star, and thanks the gold star of Venus before traveling on alone with the horse.
Went through the desert. Yeah, cool.
After half a day without seeing another person, and with no food, he's starting to get a bit disheartened. And his two disciples were also just eaten, so yeah.
Yeah, it's a bad day.
And suddenly, two tigers appear in front of him, blocking his path, and huge snakes circle in around him from behind. And to his left and right, there are strange creatures he doesn't even recognize. And at this point, the horse basically just gives up on life and lies down on the ground, refusing to budge at all. So
Relatable.
he thinks he's about to die, reasonably, when suddenly all the tigers and snakes and beasts run away. Looking further ahead, there's a man approaching with a steel trident in his hand and a bow strapped to his waist. He's wearing a leopard skin cap, a lamb's wool robe with silk brocade, and suede boots.
Looking fancy. Definitely. Well, I hesitate to say well dressed, but certainly
Well,
something.
he has silk decorations on his robe, so
Nice. Takes a it's that Dolly Parton quote, isn't it? It takes a lot of money to look this cheap. I'm that this guy now looks entirely like Dolly Parton in my head, and I'm not going to budge from that.
That's fine. So
Cool.
Tripitaka shouts out to the man and begs him to save him. So the man introduces himself as Bo Quinn. People also call him the senior guardian of the mountain. It's just what they call me. It's my nickname. It's what everyone calls me. Senior guardian of the mountain.
That's I've heard it bandied about, yeah.
So Tripitaka explains his quest, and Bo Quinn is happy to take Tripitaka in for the night. He also mentions they're actually still in Tang territory. I guess it extends over the border wall a little bit. And Bo Quinn is also a Tang subject, so he's happy to help. They head towards Bo Quinn's house, but he says to stop when there's a sudden wind, saying it means there's a mountain cat approaching. So Bo Quinn goes forward on his own. He finds a huge tiger. The tiger actually tries to run away, but Bo Quinn chases after it, and somehow he actually manages to cat up cat oh sorry cat up
Add up.
somehow he actually manages to catch up and get close to the tiger, which holy fucking shit. And when he does, it turns around and tries to take a swipe at him, and they fight for an hour until Bo Quinn finally manages to drive his trident into the tiger's chest.
Whoa.
So I will point out as well that China used to use a 12-hour system, not a 24-hour one. So he was fighting with that tiger for like 2 fucking hours.
I can't believe Tripitaka was just sitting and watching that
He
for
does
2 hours.
absolutely nothing.
I'm just picturing it with like popcorn.
I mean, would you interfere? Would you go near that?
I don't know. If I had a mad all sorts of magic shit that was supposed to help, maybe I'd try figure something out. Or I'd run the fuck away. I would take one of those two options. I wouldn't just like sit back and watch this guy try and wrestle a tiger for 2 hours.
Bo Quinn declares the tiger is going to be their dinner, and he starts to drag it along with him as they continue back to his home village.
That's heavy, but
Yeah.
okay.
Yeah, he just drags the tiger up the mountain. When they arrive at Bo Quinn's house, he orders his houseboys to skin and cook the tiger while he has tea with Tripitaka and introduces him to his wife and his mother.
Nice.
So as they're chatting, his mother points out that tomorrow is the anniversary of Bo Quinn's father's death, and they invite Tripitaka to perform like a kind of a mass for it, because he's a priest.
Okay.
So after night falls, the tiger meat is finally ready for dinner, and it's only now that Tripitaka informs them that he's actually a lifelong vegetarian, has literally never eaten meat in his life.
Oh, for God's sake. Although I suppose if you just watch this guy wrestle a tiger for 2 hours, I'm pretty sure you're not gonna want to offend him in any way, shape, or form.
Well, he by putting it off, he's just making it worse.
This is true, but it's again, it's quite relatable.
But yeah, Boquet is embarrassed. They don't have much in the way of vegetables, and even if they put together some roots or whatever, all their cookware is soaked in grease and animal fat. So Boquin's mother says to stop fretting, she can make something vegetarian. So she and her daughter-in-law get one of the pots they have, heat it up, and wash it out, and just scrub it repeatedly to get every layer of grease off it. That takes ages. Like, fair play to them.
Yeah.
That's a lot of scrubbing and a lot of elbow grease.
Well done.
So they make a soup out of elm leaves and some rice, and get some dried vegetables together for Tripitaka. And for Boquin, he gets the tiger meat, as well as snake, fox, and rabbit meat, and cured venison.
That's a bit much.
It's a lot of meat.
I mean, yeah.
Like, someone should warn him about gout. So, as Boquin is about to pick up his chopsticks and start eating, he realizes that Tripitaka is saying a prayer before the meal. He doesn't really know what to do, and just kind of awkwardly stands in the corridor until Tripitaka is done. Tripitaka explains it's just a short prayer priests say before meals, and Boquin basically says, "You priests are really particular about everything. Even for meals, you have to mum or sorry, even for a meal, you have to mumble something."
Yeah, that's fair.
It's not important at all. I just wanted to leave in this. The sheer awkwardness of this whole bit, because I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. Fair.
So after the meal, Tripitaka gets a tour of the house. Boquin has a shed out back where he keeps all his weapons, bows, arrows, spears, knives, tridents, and rods, and the tiger skin is also draped over the rafters drying. He invites Tripitaka to sit down and chat inside here for a while. Tripitaka is just like, "No, let's not."
Okay.
So they go out around back. He also has a herd of tamed deer kept for times when hunting is bad.
He's just very into the meat.
He fucking loves meat. So the next day, they all go to the shrine for Boquin's dad, and Tripitaka starts a bit of a ceremony. He beats on his wooden fish, which is not a euphemism. It's a ceremonial instrument, and not necessarily actually shaped like a fish.
Okay.
It's a real serious thing, and he recites the Lotus Sutras. He recites the Sutra for the Salvation of the Dead, the Diamond Sutra, the Guanyin Sutra, the Lotus Sutra, and the Amitayus Sutra, and finally the Peacock Sutra, and he finishes by giving a sermon of a story of Buddha healing a sick monk.
Nice, okay. Good service. Also, like a little bit of a passive aggressive, you know what would help to Buddha there. Just saying there's a precedent if it happens.
Well, he's fine. It's only his disciples got eaten. He's fine.
Yeah, he'll be okay.
That night, Boquin's dad appeared in the dreams of the whole family, telling them that he had been trapped in the region of darkness, but Tripitaka's prayers have allowed him to move on, and he's about to be reincarnated as a rich nobleman in China. So that's nice.
Yeah, it's lovely. Cool. Yeah.
The next day, when they realize they all have the same dream, the family goes and thanks Tripitaka together. They feed him again, and they offer him a tail of silver to send him off. But he refuses to take any money, but instead asks if Boquin could escort him along the road for, you know, as long as is reasonable.
That's fair. I mean, it sort of seems like the presence of someone who can wrestle a tiger might be useful.
Boquin goes with him, taking some houseboys as well for escort, for about half a day before they come across the Mountain of the Two Frontiers, which marks the actual boundary between the Tang Empire and the territory controlled by Tartars.
Okay.
So Boquin says this is as far as he can go, and says goodbye to Tripitaka. But Tripitaka at this point is a bit scared to go out into the unknown without anyone else. He grabs Boquin's sleeves and he starts crying.
The crying's a bit much, but otherwise, you know what? Fair.
No, come on. Like, he's fucked. His fucking two disciples got eaten 2 days ago by an army of 50 ogres. Like, I think it's pretty reasonable to be fucking scared and worried and cry.
Yeah, no, I take it back. Definitely, he can cry.
I will read out the last paragraph of the chapter verbatim. It was at this tender moment of farewell that there came from beneath the mountain a thunderous voice crying, "My master has come! My master has come!" Tripitaka was dumbfounded, and Boquin trembled. We do not know who was crying. Let's listen to that explanation in the next chapter.
Interesting.
Do you have any theories about who it might be?
I couldn't say, Guiva. I couldn't say. Could it possibly... I don't know. It's been so long. Is it possibly someone we've seen before?
It could be. It could
be the return of Monkey.
It could be a character we've seen before, but we'll have to find out next chapter.
It's a hell of a cliffhanger, definitely.
I kind of wonder, is General Yin the Tiger Monster King also the tiger that Boquin kills, because he's never mentioned again? None of those three Monster Kings are ever mentioned again.
I mean, he could be, or he could just be just a random tiger. It's impressive either way.
Yeah. I know you're not much one for computer games, but did you see the thing I posted on Twitter?
Yes, about... there's a game with deep lore, is what I saw.
With deep lore?
Yes, that's... Yeah. I saw it. There's a computer game, and it's exciting.
So there's a Chinese company whose name I forgot to write down, making a game called Black Myth Wukong that they put out a 13-minute little ad for announcing it, and it looks really impressive. It's, for one, it's just very pretty, and it looks quite fun as well. But it's actually a game where you play as Sun Wukong going around beating up stuff. It looks really cool. And like I said, very pretty. But it's also interesting because it looks like they've taken a good effort to try and like replicate the actual powers he uses in the novel as part of the game, which is...
Okay, cool.
Really interesting. And I think I saw an article... with a few quotes from one of the people making it who said like they were specifically like their plan is to have like 72 different powers that you can use in a game to match up with the 72 transformations that the Monkey King is said to have in the novel.
Nice.
And
What's the name of the game?
Black Myth Wukong. I'll put a link to the trailer for it in the show notes, I guess.
Yeah, cool.
But yeah, it looks cool and has as well as just beating stuff up with a pole, there's the Monkey King in it, making a little clone army, transforming into a little flying insect to sneak around, and from the looks of it, possibly transform, maybe be able to transform into bosses that you've beat before, which is just a cool idea for a game in general, I think. And yeah,
Nice.
it looks really fun, but it's probably, I don't know, it's this thing where they put out this little highlight reel kind of thing, but there apparently it's basically what they showed is I think in what into the entirety of what they have. There's no release date or anything like that, and they're still hiring people, so God knows when or if it'll actually get released. It's not an adaptation of the book. From the little intro to the trailer, it seems like it's possibly set after the book, or the book might be fictional in the setting, or there's kind of a if you watch the trailer, you'll understand there's kind of a little introduction giving a couple different possibilities as to what this story really is. But it looks like they're making a strong effort to draw how the game actually works it directly from the novel, which is cool.
That is very cool. Love that relationship with the source material.
But yeah, that's all we have. So listen next time for to find out who the mysterious voice under the mountain could possibly be.
Who could it be? Who?
Who?
We just don't
Woo.
know. Woo, woo, woo,
Woo.
a. Oh God.
Okay. As always, social media links in the show notes, subscribe, all that stuff, blah-de-blah-de-blah-de-blah.